Hello, hello, hello. It's Ari Rosenbaum, soon to be joined by Dan Venturi for another fun-filled episode of F1K Podcast. This week's episode, we're going to talk about problems that plan sponsors might not even know about. It's a pretty dangerous situation where a plan sponsor doesn't really know what's going on with their plan. There's problems, and they have completely no idea. So in a second, we're going to talk to Dan Venturi about, the steps, the different types of problems that plan sponsors aren't really, knowledgeable about, and it's going on right underneath their nose. And we're back with Dan Venturi. Dan, how are you?
Doing well, Ari. How are you?
Good. It's like, long time no hear, no see. We saw each other yesterday at our
favorite
place. We go to the Cheesecake Factory in Melville, which is I love that one because we can actually get a seat, no problem. It's not like Westbury.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm always there early. I always talk to my friend Dan, the bartender.
And I'm always there late.
Yeah, well, I'm there early, and sometimes you're late, sometimes you're not. Yesterday, you weren't particularly late, so.
Yes, yesterday was a good day. Yeah. We didn't have too many crises to deal with yesterday.
Well, that's what happens when you're TPA.
That's part of it.
Yeah, of course. But so when the people in our world who listen to this, our listening world, we're taping this a week before LA. So when they hear this, when it's finally available for download, it will be the LA conference. The thing might actually pop up around the time. Well, it'll be, by the time people listen to it, the LA conference might have already happened. So we're looking forward to that. And then we got our events in St. Petersburg, March 7th and 8th, the planned sponsor one and 8th, on March 8th at Tropicana Field. Atlanta, we opened up the registration for that. That's April 12th, May the 3rd in Kansas City, June 14th in Denver, Colorado. September hasn't been booked yet. Soon we'll deal with that. It's probably going to be Cleveland. October 11th is Foxborough, Massachusetts, and, December will look like AT&T Stadium in Dallas, Texas. They came back with us with a proposal that makes sense.
Good.
I had my friend Larry talk to them. Larry Davis is a good friend of mine. He used to be vice president of Steiner Sports. He's a guy who books all my athlete appearances, and he helps with the venues and all that. He got me Dodger Stadium, and he worked for me on AT&T Stadium. So, And we'll see Larry in L.A. He'll be there with Steve Garvey, which will be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So anyway,
two quick questions. The 11th, the October one, that's a Friday, right?
Yeah.
That's not Columbus Day.
No.
It's that weekend.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. And then my second question is, do you think Manny Machado will be in Yankee spring training when we're there in March?
I don't know. The White Sox supposedly left room for him in their clubhouse. I really don't know. I think it's more, it's either going to be the White Sox, it could be Philly, it could be one of these dark horse teams that wants to pick up a bargain. It's just interesting. The closer, the spring training is open, closer we get to spring games, I think there's going to be, a lot of more teams thinking they could pick up a bargain by signing Harper and Machado. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yankees are always coy. Yankees are very coy. I mean, I remember that with the A-Rod trade. When Boone got hurt playing pickup basketball, they weren't going to go for A-Rod. They weren't going to do it. And then, of course, they pulled the trigger.
I remember that well. That was the winner that I ran into Don Zimmer a few times at Yonkers Raceway. He was a big-time horse player.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he liked to play the horses. But yeah, so should be interesting what happens. I really don't know, but yeah, we gotta get our tickets for the Yankee game. It's like a 1 o'clock start. We gotta arrive early to make sure we get that game.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about this week's topic: problems that plan sponsors might not even know about. I mean, plan sponsors. Well, first let me introduce the whole part. I always talk about a family member who would never go to the doctor for preventive care. She always said that if she would go to the doctor, that meant she was sick. So her goal was avoiding the doctor at all costs, which is, to me, the silliest reason ever. If you're sick, go to the doctor. Going to the doctor doesn't mean that you're sick. It's just circular reasoning. That person told me the story of somebody I knew when I was a kid, and he never wanted to go to the doctor. And for months and months, he stopped, and he went on a trip to Europe with his family, and he was so sick, he decided to leave the trip early, left his wife and daughter in Europe, and he went to the United States, where within a week, he died. And it turns out he had leukemia, never got treated. And I had a friend like that, Rich Lorita, who I talk about in the industry. I work with him. He's a TBL salesperson. He was sick for a very long time, coughing up a lung, it always seemed like, and always blaming it on food poisoning. And Rich had colon cancer that spread to his liver, and he passed away. And, you know, it still bothers me to this day about that. You know, when you know you're sick or you have a feeling, go see a doctor, see if there is a problem. But with a plan sponsor and the problems that they have that's dealing with the health of their 401k plan, they are completely unaware. It's not like there's a symptom like, you know, when you have cancer, there's certain symptoms that you have. I know somebody who I knew through networking. His daughter's got Hodgkin's lymphoma, Hodgkin's disease. You know, the Larry David joke, good Hodgkin's versus bad Hodgkin's. Hodgkin's disease, which is a lower grade of lymphoma. But anyway, she had symptoms, and it took for a while for her to figure out what it was, but she, you know, went to the doctor, and they tell you what's wrong. And the problem with plan sponsors, there could be something going wrong with their plan, and they have absolutely no idea. And the problem why is that it's usually only discovered when there's a change of the TPA or when the IRS and the Department of Labor audit. And that's when these errors that you never knew about and pop up, and wow, the plan sponsor now has to pay, you know, $50,000, $75,000 to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you basically summed up the 10-second elevator pitch for a 316. I mean, that's exactly what you know what we do, right? That's the point of the industry, is making sure that we stay ahead of those problems, identify them, and to the extent possible prevent them, so you don't end up with that sizable car action. You know, it's one of those things where you just, if you run a plan, you can't just put your head in the sand and hope it's all going to be okay. You have to, it's a moving thing. There are moving parts to it, a lot of moving parts to it. There are a lot of, you know, mandatory requirements you need to comply with. And you have to be vigilant, or pay someone to be vigilant if you know, you don't think that's something that you can handle.
Oh, exactly. So, you know. The problem is most plan sponsors are, you know, we talk about the time, they're reactive, they're not proactive. So they don't want to do a plan review. So, you know, if they have a TPA that they don't, you know, check on and review what the work they're doing, they're going in blindly. And of course, all of a sudden, you know, you find out later, you know what, they messed up the top heavy testing. They messed up the ADP. They misidentified somebody as a non-key when they should have been a key, or whatever it may be. And, you know, the problem with discovering errors later is it's more costlier because, you know, based on the time, you might be out of luck in time in terms of mechanisms of fixing the problem. You know, if you pick something earlier, like an ADP failure, if you did it early, you could do refunds. When you miss it by a year or two or three, you're limited to doing a QNEC because the time for doing refunds, that opportunity closed.
Yep.
So it's really costly for the plan sponsor to have these problems arise, you know, discovered later. But again, that's what happens. Next thing, you know, the problems that plan sponsors not need to know about. Really, the biggest problem that I have as an ERISA attorney today in dealing with plan sponsors, and that's the late deferral deposits. The late deposits deferrals. Back in the old days, we thought, you know, as long as they got it in by the 15th day of the following month, they were fine. And the Department of Labor then said, you know what, that's inaccurate. And, you know, that's a problem because we have a lot of plan sponsors who may be a week or two late and even days late. And if it's caught by an auditor or it's caught by the IRS, the Department of Labor, you know, that's a problem. And, you know, I have a lot of employers where it's not just one late deferral. We're talking about, you know, 30 or 40 a year. And they don't fix until years later. So that's like one problem that plan sponsors aren't even aware of because their plan providers didn't tell them that they got to get it in as quickly as possible.
Well, yeah. So a couple of things on that. I mean, I'm not too sure how recent of a phenomenon is, but we've had a couple of clients receive letters from the DOL indicating that there were, you know, late contributions cited on the 5500 and letting the plan sponsor know that some form of action was needed, right? Which basically just tells me that they're going to, you know, have some sort of leash on that plan sponsor and, you know, a couple of years down the road, revisit the 5500. And if that issue is still there, they might come knocking on your door. So that's something that we've seen in terms of late contributions. The other thing that's, I guess, interesting about it is different providers will handle it differently. Some are fairly draconian in terms of, you know, maintaining the standard that you as the plan sponsor set. So if you get it in 5 days, anything outside of that window, they'll tell you that it's late. Other plan sponsors will stick to the letter of the law, even though the DOL told you the letter of the law isn't the law. So there's definitely some variation there. Same thing with audit firms. You know, there's some auditors that give you a little bit more latitude on that, and sort of don't deem it late until somebody more official, I guess, meaning the DOL, were to deem it late. While others will, you know, like I mentioned a second ago, will hold you to the standard that you set. So there's definitely some variance. I think the best thing, the rule of thumb from an administrative standpoint, is to stay within, what is it, 5 days for a large filer?
Yeah.
7 days, I believe, for a 7 or 8 days for a smaller filer. I mean, stay within that lane. Don't deviate, you know, much further than those numbers.
Exactly. But, you know, the problem that I have with the Department of Labor is a lot of people think that when you have late deferrals that, you know, as long as you correct them, that's fine. But again, like you said, the Department of Labor is sending letters to people who said on the 5500 that they had late deposits and then following up them and said, you know what, we didn't get a copy of that the VCP application. The VFCP application, the Voluntary Fiduciary Compliance Program. And so now that it's kind of to me like a nod to the fact that, you know, you should put one in no matter what. So, you know, that's the problem that, you know, I find.
Uh-huh.
So speaking of other problems, the problems of missing plan documents and plan amendments. I have had problems with that. Because the IRS has a view that if they don't have a copy, like when they ask for a copy of the signed plan documents, and if you don't have them, they act as if you never did have them. So, you know, if you have a plan document that's been going back, if you started your plan document in the 80s, and for some reason they ask you for the Tax Reform Act of 86 document that was supposedly done in between the years, I think, of 89, 93, or whatever it was, if you didn't have that done, they want you to go to VCP and apply for a new plan document because they'll say that you did it late. And that's a problem. You know, everybody's telling the plan sponsors you only need 7 years to keep ERISA files, but they don't tell them that, you know what, always keep your plan documents and your plan amendments in a file, especially sign one, because, you know, you need to have it. You need to have a copy of it. So, you know, they need to have a copy of all their plan restatements, plan amendments, you know, everything possible. Because, like I said, otherwise the IRS treats them as them never having it. And that's not good.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, from my perspective as an administrator and a TPA, I mean, we control what happens when we get the plan, right? When the plan comes over. What happened before that, I mean, if the plan sponsor wasn't keeping good records, you know, that can be a problem. You know, we can handle and assume liability for the period of time that we're engaged, but and if anything, that sort of says that's a plug to continuity of service providers, right? Find the right service providers and stay with them, and then they'll become that sort of institution of memory. But, you know, we know that that's not real life, right? I mean, plans leave all the time. What happens, right? If that plan, to your point, was founded in the 80s, does someone at the company have records of all that, all those documents from the 80s? I suspect very few folks out there actually do.
Yeah, the most employers that I deal with have very, very bad records, and that's a headache that they, you know, they don't really know that that could be a problem later down the line, you know. Especially in case of an audit, they'll ask for certain plain documents, and they may ask for plain documents for the previous restatement that, you know, the employer might have chucked in the garbage. So that's a big problem. Another problem is not operating the plan according to its terms. We have that a lot lately with compensation issues, where the plan document says one thing about recognizing compensation, and then the plan sponsor does something completely different, where they exclude or include a piece of compensation that the plan document says otherwise. The problem, of course, of, either is that you're not operating the terms according to the terms of the plan document, and of course, that's a compliance issue that may require, and usually does require, filing with the IRS VCP program, especially when you have late, let's say, for example, bonuses. You didn't include bonuses in the definition of compensation. You didn't have people the ability to defer. That's a problem. Or you didn't give a contribution based on that compensation. So that's a big, big problem. Entry, eligibility, those are big issues. Vesting is a big problem. And sometimes something as simple as not, properly allocating plan forfeitures according to what the plan document says. That might be something you not be doing. The plan sponsor is not doing it, and that could be a problem as well.
Yeah, that's a big one, right? I mean, we see that a lot. That's right in our wheelhouse. And one of the things that, shameless plug, we endeavor really hard and have software in place to sort of catch that stuff.
Right.
It happens every year.
Right.
Comps increased every year and folks miss it, and we make we've seen a lot of that.
I get it. And of course, one of our favorites, incorrect or missing compliance tests. Again, we've talked about the situation time and time again. Compliance tests that weren't done or were just done incorrectly because the TPA didn't include the right people or mischaracterized the people or who knows, the plan sponsor provided incorrect information on the census. And that could be a huge problem because, like I said earlier, if you discover that later, that could limit you as to the correction you are allowed to make. That's a problem, especially if it's not caught in the year that it's made.
Oh, yeah, that gets to be expensive.
Yeah, again, I had the client who hired one of the payroll providers who just didn't bother to do the testing, the plan failed, and so, the plan sponsor was out $70,000 in late QNX for the failed test.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money. They actually had to take out a loan to pay for it. And that's a problem. This is what happens when, plan sponsors are really unaware of the problems that they have. Next, of course, this is your favorite topic, not providing the required notices. This is probably something that you should talk about because as a 316 administrator, that's one of your big jobs.
Yeah, that's a huge part of what we do. Basically, takes up most of October, November, and that first week in December. We probably got something north of 15,000 letters out this year. So it's a big deal. It's a requirement. You have to do it. You have to get it out. We have a lot of manufacturing clients that don't have email addresses. Obviously, electronic is the way to go. In some cases, I don't want to say all cases. I do think there's value in getting a hard copy out and having something, that you could sort of hold on to. I haven't run into many auditors that require more documentation than seeing the notices. I think what's real timely about this topic is we had a client who was aggravating, and this was a new one for me. I've never experienced this one before. And I was a little speechless. I didn't really know how to reply to him when he brought this up. But essentially, he was upset that we sent the notices out and didn't tell him that we sent the notices out. So it was nothing that he asked for. It wasn't a requirement that he was aware of or any of that. But he was upset that his boss got a notice and he didn't tell his boss that the notice was coming. Something to that effect, I sort of tuned out a little bit after, you know, he brought up the subject to begin with. But you know, he knew nothing about this and still thought that it was a reason to sort of get at us for doing our job, right? Like, we were doing what he paid us to do. And by all means, he said a number of times he was glad we did it, but he just wanted, you know, it upset me the whole weekend, Ari. I was stewing about that all weekend long.
That's because that's more about control than anything else. They wanted to be on top of everything and you know, be given, I guess, the update that you know, it wasn't, you know, that they should have expected it. Some, you know, probably an employee asked them about it, and they got upset that they didn't know about it. That's, to me, that's really all that is. But in terms of things I'd be ticked off about with a plant provider, that's probably one of the, you know, lowest on my list. But, you know, that's you know, you got to deal with people. That's the problem.
With being, yeah. You know, well, it's a people business.
Exactly. Sure. You got to deal with the clients and deal with their expectations. So he wanted to be in the loop, as I say. Yeah. And last but not least, problems in the fiduciary process. You know, this happens when you don't have a financial advisor that you actually see or doesn't do their job, or you don't have one. You know, there are problems that could be made from the investment side of the plan. You know, something as simple as not properly educating plan participants about the investments in the plan, or, you know, offering retail share classes of mutual funds when you have institutional share classes available. These are, you know, or you don't have an IPS, which isn't legally required, but I think every plan should have it. But again, that's not something, you know, you want to deal with as a plan sponsor. And as a plan sponsor, you're probably not aware of it until there's a problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, as a fiduciary, right, that's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. One of the things that we like to look at and like to see when we start any engagement is an IPS. You know, we like to work with advisors. We don't really want to step on anyone's toes. But it is something that we need to check off, right? We need to know it's there. And you know, to a greater degree, we want to see at least an annual meeting. You know, that there's something going on there between the advisor and the client, right? That someone's watching the investment. Someone is looking at the performance. There's some sort of watch list, you know, for underperforming funds, that sort of stuff. Just have a process in place, right? What we talk about all the time.
Right. And again, that's not something plan sponsors are really knowledgeable about. You know, I always talk about Pat, the HR director, who, you know, at my old law firm, you know, she'll always get attacked by me because, you know, I still carry a grudge. But, you know, not having an advisor in the plan, giving us Morningstar profiles for, you know, plan funds that haven't been reviewed in 10 years, that's a problem, no matter which way you slice it. So that's a huge big deal. And especially if you're high, you know, you're paying an advisor to do this and they're still screwing up and, you know, not dealing with it, you know, that's even worse than not having an advisor. So you're paying somebody to do no work. And I always talk about that medical practice, paying a broker 60 bips on a $14 million plan, and the broker never bothered to talk to the client or advise them, never saw them, didn't have an IPS, didn't provide any education materials to the participants. At my urging, thanks to that plan tune-up review for $750, they fired the broker, hired a 338, and was paying I think 25 bips. And we know those 338 guys. They were one of the sponsors at our Philly conference. And, you know, that's what happens. But, you know, until the plan sponsor's aware of it, they have absolutely no idea. So I think that puts a wrap of it for this episode. We'll talk again next week. We're actually probably going to record it not too long after this one because we've got to double up with our LA plans. So until next week, we're signing off. Same podcast, same 401k topics.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Bye.
Slammer, but you know Babe Ruth, you gotta learn how to relate. I may be swinging from the pearly gate. I got all the answers, and lo and behold, you got the right key, baby, but the wrong key hole, yo. This does the trick.